I'm Jason Van Medding.
And I'm Ksenia Chmutina.
Welcome to Disasters Deconstructed podcast. So welcome back to Disasters Deconstructed week 9. This is Jason Van Medding and I'm here with Ksenia.
Hello. Hello.
And today we are going to reflect back on a conversation we had with Giuseppe Farino and Emmanuel Raggi when they were in town in Gainesville about our field of disaster studies. And so this episode is going to be around the theme of whether disaster studies is really so radical as we hope it is. And we sat down with Giuseppe and Emmanuel around the time that we had the IREC conference, where we were trying to put on a conference that was kind of disruptive and that was challenging some of the things that we normally associate with academic conferences. So we sat down with Giuseppe and Emmanuel to talk about like our intentions for the conference and why we were trying to do something a bit different and encouraging different types of submissions and putting on sessions that were going to really challenge the status quo. And then we talk more broadly about the field in general.
Yeah, you know, this was a really cool chat, I think, that we had. You know, it was great to catch up with Emmanuel and Giuseppe, but also to discuss what's happening in disaster studies. And I think we came up with the idea of how we're going to run the conference sort of a year before, or even a year and a half before that, haven't we? When we all were really bored sitting in yet another PowerPoint presentation, sort of 2-hour slot of talks that were telling us that, oh, wow, we have an engineering solution. And then if we implement social science, imagine that all the disaster study problems will be solved just like that.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm sure, you know, it's not intentional, but I find it almost ironic how, particularly in disaster studies, we talk a lot these days about transformational change, right? So all the research that we're doing, we sort of have to show that there will be transformational change. But I always feel that we need to have a transformational change in the way we do research, not just in the way we impact the society. And the way we do research in disaster studies, and, you know, this is kind of a very general we, is quite normative. And then the way we present the research is quite normative. We are really not that keen on stepping out of our comfort zones, are we?
And last week when I was at the conference in Colorado, you know, that's one of the things that I was struck by, was the sort of way that scholars choose to depoliticize their research.
Right
down to the methodologies that they're using and the questions that they're asking and just the way that they're framing their research problems.
Yeah, that's really strange because disasters are political. You know, how can you depoliticize research in disasters when it's all about power?
Well, yeah, it's a thing that I think people do in a way, in a form of self-censoring. And often, like the impression I get from most of those that talk about this as a good thing, you know, depoliticizing their work, is that it opens up doors. It is helpful for procuring funding and sponsorship for work, in recruiting partners, because depoliticizing your narrative helps you to get a seat at the table, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. And we are all funding dependent. We are all partners dependent. So, you know, it's happening to all of us. But I guess we need to be maybe a little bit braver in how we pursue what we do and how we report what we do, but also how we present what we do. You know, coming to particularly to an academic conference, which is well, I'd say a safe space, right? It's a space for debate. It's a space for intelligent conversation. It's a space where you can actually argue where you're supposed to argue. So that platform gives you a great opportunity to actually say what it is you really think you should be saying, you know, given that you have evidence, of course. Mm. So I always find that, that, you know, that niceness and sort of politeness in academics, not in a human way, but in a kind of research way, is a little bit ironic, I guess.
Yeah. And maybe it's also when you bring different stakeholders into the room that are not necessarily that familiar with each other. And there's this reluctance to offend others, you know? And so I feel like in spaces where you've got a mixture of, you know, community stakeholders and practitioners and maybe people from government agencies and academics, the academics tend to self-censor a bit more than usual.
Yeah, totally, totally.
So I was thinking, you mentioned about the funny thing that goes on where many researchers don't really appreciate maybe those from other fields who use different methodologies. And I remember you were telling me about your recent experiences in Nepal with about being the token social scientist, right? So maybe you can tell us a bit about that.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, endless stories, you know. I mean, how long do you have, Jason? Sitting comfortably.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, so just last week, you know, where I was facilitating the workshop and I just kind of overheard, you know, there was this woman from, she was one of the local stakeholders in Nepal, you know, working with the community. She was representing a non-governmental organization. And the guy who was sort of facilitating the table, so I was facilitating the whole workshop, he is a proper, you know, structural engineer from the UK, and they were talking about different data, different information that they need to, I don't know, inform decisions. I'm not entirely sure what the question was. And he said that, okay, so what data do we need? And everybody said, well, you know, we need numerical this and numerical that, and we need measurements for this and measurements for that. And she said, oh, what about indigenous knowledge? And he just looked at her like she, you know, she was from a different planet. Yeah. And he said, like, what? And she said, well, you know, it's the knowledge that like local communities have to bring. And then there was this really awkward pause and he was staring at her and then he said, oh, but I don't know how to fit it into hydraulic model. But that just summarizes the way we think and the way we work, isn't it? And he's not a bad person. And actually, I was pretty impressed by him, you know, in previous days, because he was really trying to engage with me and understand where it is I'm coming from, which is, you know, which is great, because not every engineer is willing to try and understand why my definition of vulnerability is different from their definition of vulnerability, right?
Yeah.
But nevertheless, even after 3 days of trying to argue why social science is so important, he still doesn't quite get it. And he still kind of thinks that what I'm doing on the project is just like, okay, nice to have, but actually still doesn't really fit into a hydraulic model.
Mm.
And it doesn't. It doesn't fit into a hydraulic model. That is the whole point, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I think, and that kind of illustrates where we're at in terms of still operating in silos a lot of the time and speaking in different jargon and different languages, not really developing those skills of translation and like wanting to understand other perspectives is really important. You know, the will to do that, because, yeah, often people are stuck in these mindsets that their way of doing things is the right way.
Yeah, but, you know, I think we're not trained to try and appreciate other people's mindsets. As the researchers, I mean, remember your research methods, even at master's level, right? I'm not even talking about PhD. So you have a general lecture on qualitative methods, you have a general lecture on quantitative methods, and then you just happily forget about it, right?
Yeah.
Until you choose the methodology and then the method that you choose, without having any regard for anybody else.
I think that it is definitely about wanting to understand about others' perspectives. rather than just being like a technical barrier or deficiency. It's absolutely about, it's like a human aspect that's important here. And it's about people valuing each other and as professionals, as researchers, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this conversation with Giuseppe and Emmanuel. So I'm looking forward to the episode today.
Yeah, me too. And I'm also looking forward to the future episode, which, you know, this is a prequel to, where we asked our friends and colleagues what it is they think is the status quo now in disaster studies and how we need to disrupt that. But that'll be coming your way in the next couple of weeks. So, well, let's listen to the episode. Enjoy.
So this week in Disasters Deconstructed, we have the conference co-chairs of IREC here in Gainesville with us. So again, Ksenia's here in the studio,
Hello. The
grandly titled studio with me. And we also have Giuseppe Farino and Emmanuel Raju with us.
Hello.
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 Hi, guys.
Welcome to Gainesville.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation.
Well, this is promising to be a really exciting week. We've got so many speakers coming and like lots of exciting participants. Some really cool people are going to talk, and you know, it's not just going to be your kind of normal academic conference. So yeah, we're really looking forward to all the great presentations, but also the photo exhibition will be pretty cool and the movie night. So yeah, so much to look forward to this week. And well, it's pretty cool to be in Florida too. A little bit hot outside.
It's even hot inside.
It's even hot
inside.
We have
the AC on this, so kind of toasty.
Yeah, we've been here 48 hours and we still haven't had any ice cream.
Sorry, I promised ice cream.
Right, yeah, so we ought to.
It's definitely warmer than I thought from Copenhagen.
Oh, yeah. So, today we've decided to chat to people who are kind of behind the conference scenes, so to say. So yeah, Emmanuel and Giuseppe, welcome.
Okay, so let's start off by asking you guys maybe a bit about yourselves and your work, just to allow our listeners to get to know you a little bit. So Giuseppe, do you want to go first?
Yeah, okay. Okay, so I am Giuseppe Farino. I am an Italian guy who works on disaster risk reduction. I am a human geographer by background, but then I moved to, let's say, relatively quickly to disaster management. Well, I work on several topics on disasters in Italy, plus I work on climate change adaptation and how different kind of organizations, including communities and businesses, adapt to climate change. And of course, I am one of the organizers of the conference, and this is myself in very few words.
Thanks, Giuseppe.
Thank you, first of all, for inviting us here today. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I originally come from India. I'm currently working as an assistant professor at the University of Copenhagen. I lead some of the courses on the Masters of Disaster Management at the University of Copenhagen. And most of my work has been around the field of disaster risk reduction, understanding why people are affected by disasters, the way they are affected. Mostly I work in South Asia. It's exciting to be here as a conference co-chair. I think we started planning this conference actually when we were sitting in the middle of a conference room.
2 years ago.
Almost 2 years ago, starting looking, putting together the themes, and it's been an amazing journey that now we're here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of globalization in action, isn't it?
Right. So, have any of you guys organized conferences before?
Well, I have organized sessions, conferences.
Conferences.
Quite a big step, so.
So we have in Copenhagen, we did that twice.
That's where we met, actually.
That's
where we met.
2015, December, was the first NEEDS conference, what we call the North European Emergency and Disaster Studies conference.
So long ago.
So we've been friends for 4 years now. We survived.
Yeah. No, it's great. I mean, it's kind of, it's pretty cool there, isn't everyone's friends with everyone, and it's just nice to work together with friends.
Well, I think that, like, if I look back to when we first started talking about Eric, we talked a lot about, like, what's wrong with many conferences, and it's almost like we had a couple of months where we just put out ideas, what we wanted to do kind of differently than the norm, and eventually, like, the entire conference was shaped around that theme about how to resist and disrupt the status quo.
That's right.
Because in our research field, you know, the things are not becoming better by following the status quo. In the same way, conferences are also very much follow traditional kind of methods and processes. And I think many people, like, don't even like conferences sometimes. They just go because they can meet people. So we wanted to produce something, I think, that had a little bit of oomph and something different that would actually engage people intellectually, right?
That's
right. Yeah, no pressure. Oh, your father's calling you from the
porch. Name, so... So, like, what are some of the things that were exciting for you about organizing this conference and being able to have the freedom to do things differently?
I think it started off pretty well, right? Like, in the sense that the aim was to set out to organize a different conference, to talk to people that we haven't spoken to before, to, in organizing a conference, to listen to people that we don't read within our own subject area on a daily basis. To begin with that, if you look at all our keynotes, there are people that we don't read of, that we've not heard of before. They're doing amazing work in their own field. And here we are to listen to them. How could we use some of the work they do?
Mm.
How could we bring that into some of the work that we write, research? And I think that was a good starting point.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. And for those coming or hearing about the conference, that was something that was intentional. I think in other conferences, sometimes you have the same people that are invited to speak.
Yeah.
They might be kind of, you know, in the academic world, like celebrities.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That's right.
But then sometimes you go to a few of these conferences, you hear the same messages.
Right.
You don't really get anything new in terms of ideas.
Yeah.
Especially if you're very familiar with a person's work.
Yeah, I think also the fact that we try to avoid jargon, academic jargon, and to try to use a language which is relatively close to the people we are working for.
Mm-hmm.
And
We'll try.
Yes, of course, yes. But I also like this kind of informality, which is part of this conference, you know. Of course, it's an academic conference, so we need to have high standards of doing things. But it's quite informal also in the way, you know, of chatting with people, organizing stuff and working together. So I think this is a great thing. And another thing is the request we are doing on engaging with social media, so spreading the word outside the usual outlet of the journal paper or the website. So also engaging with with Twitter, and we are having good findings, so it's very good. It's a very good thing for this conference,
actually. And something that I'm very excited about is for people to get the program, which we formatted like a magazine instead of like a book of abstracts, which is kind of the norm for a conference. And so right at the outset, we invited submissions that were not just traditional academic paper submissions, but for short articles, which were opinion pieces, or stories, or poetry, or more science communication pieces.
Yeah.
And we received some really great submissions.
Yeah.
And
but also photographs.
Yeah,
For sure.
We have, almost 40 photographs.
Yep.
And I was really quite, I guess, pleasantly surprised, you know, that people met the task of not showing your kind of normal disaster damage, you know, the destruction. So the images that we usually associate with disasters, but instead, you know, people actually found a way to portray disasters without showing kind of the injury and the wound. But also there are lots of positive messages. And we'll try to share those on social media as well, because we have some pretty cool images.
Yeah. So I think the message is narrating stories in a different way than before. You know, we are trying to tell stories in a different way. So avoiding jargon, using, you know, let's say, new technique to share our work. So I think this is the most interesting part of the conference, for sure. Yeah.
And it's also about talking about disasters as everyday situations for a lot of people. I think that's also what some of the photographs I think will probably do is talk about disasters as daily situations rather than the 1-in-100-year event, which gets all the focus most of the time, and then we forget that there's a small flood somewhere, there's an ongoing drought for 5 years, nobody calls it a disaster anymore. I think that's some of the discussions that we need to have the next couple of days, is how do we talk about that and how do we bring some light onto some of these less spoken about events, processes.
And the only weapon is your name, and they won't count if you don't name. Good intentions hold us back.
So both of you are disaster scholars.
Right.
What it is you think that we need to challenge in disaster studies, you know, what is the kind of, what would you break, what status quo would you break if it was up to you when it came to the area of our research?
Yeah, I think to begin with, I mean, one, I think I have to repeat myself here, is to sort of start looking at disasters not as the big ones, right? Not as the major tsunamis, the major earthquakes that happen, and all of a sudden there's all the focus. For example, if you look at the Indian Ocean tsunami 15 years ago, was still one of the better recorded disasters, but the presence of social media or the kind of focus that there is, some of the big disasters that get today, we didn't have the same focus at that time. I think that sort of focus, small events, small disasters, small, when I say small, I'm not talking about numbers, but you know what I mean, in terms of intensity and magnitude, some of them don't have the same attention. People don't even know what's going on in many parts of the world, but these loom for many number of years. And it's a really sad story that we don't get to hear this anywhere. There's a small column in one of the newspapers somewhere. So I think we need to stop talking. I think that's one of the fundamental things that we really need to challenge, is it's not a discussion about the disaster, but rather a discussion around why are people impacted the way they are, and how are they impacted, and how is that showing itself in many different ways.
Well, Manuel
already said, but of course we need, I think disrupting the status quo means explaining that the disaster is built into the everyday life of people and into the everyday life of communities and into the everyday life of our economic, productive and political system. This is quite interesting, and this is probably something that is also very, very challenging, because it's difficult to change, because of course it's, you know, if I talk about something, then if I talk about something which is general, to change this general attitude, you know, the individual is really can do very few things about this. But what is really interesting is bringing the disaster studies within a huge reflection about our political system, productive system, economic system. So how much we produce, how much we consume about this production, and why we are doing this, why we have such probably neoliberal ideology, who is bringing us in, creating risks, particularly for the most disadvantaged people. Because, you know, probably in our field is quite common, but probably, you know, let's say the people around our academic community doesn't know too much. But of course, hazards, let's say, affect all the world, but who paid the costs of the hazards are mostly the poor people, mostly the so-called vulnerable. So we need to understand why these people has this condition, why these people is vulnerable or is poor, and which is the role of the global system or the global financial, productive and political system mm-hmm. on creating these differences between rich and poor, between countries, also within countries. You know, we are here in Gatesville, but if you go out after a certain time, you see a lot of people who has no homes, or you know,
right.
you can see that they are poor and they have problems. And then, of course, probably this will be the most vulnerable in case of, let's say, of a hurricane or in case of rainfall or floods. So, because probably they might have a poor housing, or they might sleep in the street. So, this is for sure one thing that we need to talk to disrupt the status quo disaster standard. When the only weapon is your name,
and they won't count if you don't aim. In our research group at the Copenhagen Center for Disaster Research, we normally also talk about how are disasters reshaping our society. I think what we call changing disasters, for example, is how are societies transforming after disasters, and how are these societies again either rebuilt or built, either with newer forms of power structures, or are we dismantling some of those power structures, and how is this kind of shaping society for the future? Will we be worse off if there's another disaster that's in the making? And I think those are really important critical questions that need to be spoken about.
Well, I think I really, really love the way you guys framed it. And I think, like, in recent months, a lot of us have been working on the Manifesto for Disaster Studies.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that appears in there.
Right.
You know, in terms of some of the things that are wrong with the way that we, I guess, traditionally in a Western academic setting, have approached research.
Oh, we think about research, yeah. You know, it's not just mm-hmm. about approaches and that's mm-hmm. kind of
yeah.
the way our brain is wired.
Yeah. No, it's training
the
as
training,
well.
That's right.
It's the way you're trained to do research. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of things built in there which into our practice, into
mm-hmm.
our that kind of perpetuate injustices.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Against some of the people that we say that we're trying to
right.
to help, right?
But to help, quotation marks,
I think something interesting is that, you know, rethinking about the status quo is also reflecting on ourselves, of course, because
yes.
it's not just pointing the finger, you know,
exactly.
say, oh, it is your fault. No, it's also, we are part of this system. So
yeah.
Yeah. we as researchers and as human beings, we are part of this, system who produces inequalities and injustice. So it's also a way for us to reflect about our everyday own practices of research and telling stories about hazard and disasters. And of course, we can also say it's a sort of, we are recognizing that in the past we did things that we could do better now in the future. So
mm-hmm.
this is, I think this is what we are trying to do, also think about ourselves and trying to improve our everyday practices too.
So the manifesto that I mentioned is online. I don't know how many people have signed the manifesto.
We've got about 270 petitions.
I think
now.
This morning it was 274.
Yeah.
Mania's watching closely.
Yeah.
So the manifesto is titled Power, Prestige and Forgotten Values, a Disaster Studies Manifesto.
And it's now been translated into
yes.
Russian, Italian, Bahasa Indonesia,
Portuguese,
Spanish,
Norwegian,
Hindi one is,
yeah.
We have a draft ready.
And Chinese Mandarin, and it's coming in Japanese as well. Yeah, so it's... You know, it really is pretty
yeah.
impressive.
We're trying to get a Nepali version as well soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can get a Vietnamese one done.
Yeah,
that would be good. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah.
So that if anybody hasn't seen it yet, you can see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's a bit lengthy. I tried to put it in the program and there's a lot of words.
Good.
Could hardly fit on two pages.
Yeah.
But I think it was a lot longer before we
started
edited and
kept
it
right, yeah.
cut it down.
Yeah, but I think we'll probably try and do one of the future episodes talking about the manifesto in much more detail, you know, so watch this space. Keep listening to us.
But I think it's only the beginning of the manifesto in a way.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff within the manifesto as well that we ourselves have been discussing about how do we change things from the way we do disaster studies or the way we research disasters. So I think yes, absolutely, this will be a space to watch in terms of how do we go from here.
So it's not just about the problems with disaster studies, but how, but the solutions as well, you know, how, what do we need to do to solve those?
And I think that's extremely important because, I mean, I think it's extremely important to emphasize that as well, that, I mean, there's a lot of problem, yes, and we need to change. I think there are amazing stories from across the world who do things differently and how we need to learn from them. And I think it's important to either bring them to sort of the mainstream in quotation in a way, talk about them more strongly about some of these positive stories which can influence change. And I think that's absolutely important. That's something for us. It's not only about disrupting status quo, but it's also about bringing some of these amazing stories and how could we take it to the rest of the world.
So thanks to all of you for coming into the studio.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's great to see you again and great to hang out this week.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thanks. It was awesome being here. And it's awesome having to catch up again and talk about all the nice things in life as well.
Yeah, right.
No, I think next time with a beer.
Yes.
Ice cream.
Oh, yes.
You keep reminding me about ice cream. We have to make it happen. The rest of you all be pretty disappointed with me. It'd be like a big hosting fail. Tell you there's going to be ice cream and then no ice cream.
So you have been listening to Disasters Deconstructed with me, Emmanuel, with Ksenia, Jason,
and Giuseppe. Ciao!
Dhanyavaad!